Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. Yeah, this is the Macho Man Randy Savage, and that's the only place to listen to wrestling, I do believe. Yeah, dig it. Yeah.
The host of Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. I am Double D, the Dean of Credibility, and you can find me at Folsom County. With me, as always, oh, here he is, the above-average comedian, Dan the Man Colachico.
What does that mean? You can follow me on Twitter at DanLow83.
And not only that, with me from the start, it's a habit now. It's habit forming. He's done it at least 3 weeks. That's what they say. It creates a new habit.
Yeah. Pretty much.
It's an obsession.
Yes, it's an obsession now. So here is Omega Squad Chris Green. Where can the fine people find you?
People can find me, not unsurprisingly, on Twitter at Omega Squad.
How can anybody forget that name, being that we call it constantly to you?
I know.
Call me Chris. Okay, Omega Squad, now.
Yeah, that's right. Whatever.
Yes, indeed. You can follow the blog at HIAC Talk Radio. And Jimmy Dillon is writing again, and things are being updated. It's wonderful.
The only one that does?
Well, yeah, these days. So HIACTalkRadio.com. You can also follow the Twitter at HIACTalkRadio. Follow the Facebook, Facebook.com/HIACTalkRadio. And we're on iTunes and Stitcher. Thought I'd throw that out there.
Stitcher.
Yeah, Stitcher Radio.
Stitcher Radio.
And you can call in at 718-664-9133. Join this wonderful conversation we have going.
That number again is
718-664-9133.
Thank you.
So, tonight we have Shaka, Black Magic Shaka. He's a veteran. I think, what, like 16, 17 years he's been in the business. He's also an MMA fighter, has a professional fight under his belt. He'll be joining us.
Long time.
Yeah, yeah. Long time coming, too. Long time coming, too, for him to get on the show. Originally, I was shooting for January, and we finally got to him here on the first day of May.
Let's face it, be honest, anybody coming on the show is a long time coming, and they all should.
I think so, yes.
Man, I feel better.
I feel better, too.
Put that out there. I got you back, bro.
And we're going to be joined by the band Rekindle. They just recently got done the Damsels of Distress tour. And we're going to talk to them about what's coming next for them.
What kind of music are they, Dean?
I would call it, didn't you listen? I gave you the links. You didn't listen, did you?
I didn't.
Chris.
I would call it metal. I would call it some
fusion, perhaps?
Metally hard rock.
They're not together anymore.
Stronger than ever.
Yeah.
But we're going to be joined by Rekindle at about 10:30.
I wanted to be surprised on the show.
Oh, okay. You wanted a real reaction.
I wanted to give you a real reaction. Like, if it sucks, I'm going to go, oh, well, that sucks, guys.
I hope that it doesn't come to that.
No. They're not.
And promptly watch our guests. Here.
We're not going on that show, a-holes.
Never again. Never again.
Well, you know what? People still come on her show anyway, so I don't think.
You know what? Over the weekend, a hatchet was buried.
Do we want to talk about this?
Yes.
I would love to talk about this because I actually smiled when I saw the picture. Before you even talked to me, you went to the Beast Show, and I saw this picture, and you're going to explain what happened, and I just smiled wide.
In beautiful Dover, Delaware, which is best known, I suppose, for the Air Force Base and not much more.
The South Diner.
No, that's much further north.
Son of a gun.
Yeah, that's in, I guess, I don't know what you call that. Newcastle?
Oh, yeah, Newcastle.
Yeah, that's Newcastle. But in beautiful Dover, Delaware, the Beast Show happened, and in attendance was the elder statesman, if you will, of Indy Roundup, Tom Lyons. And, of course, Ryan was there as well, Ryan Jester. And, you know what, I said, enough is enough. Extended the friend, the hand of friendship. And
what did you actually say to him?
I said,
did he crap himself?
Oh, no, not at all. Why would he? Yeah, no. I just said, enough's enough. Let's move on because we're going to run into each other. And make sure you go to New Moon Rising Wrestling.
did you please tell me you said that?
Of course.
Are they going to try? Are they really
going to
try?
No, they're going to try because that's the third week. There's not much else going on in the world of indie wrestling. Thank goodness. So,
only when people decide to run it. Never mind.
But, like I said, that's
that's great because, you know, we don't want to be bad guys.
Not at all.
We're good guys. Shut up, Chris. No matter what happens, we're bad guys, right? Right, guys?
Typically, that's how it has been. But
that's how I feel, and I'm usually right.
The hatchet was buried. It was a great B-show. Brady and I were there calling the action, and I honestly do feel it was their best show that I've seen. Highlighted, I would say, by Blitzkrieg versus Major McClendon.
I'm glad you mentioned that name. Blitzkrieg.
Yes.
Who is that? Explain him.
Blitzkrieg is a German, a vile German wrestler.
Vile?
Well, I didn't think he was vile. Brady thought he was vile because this guy, he's doing the goose step and the salute stuff. And, he very close to winning the Flags of Our Fathers match. But luckily, Major McClendon somehow pulled it off.
Now, he's not the same gentleman that was in WCW as Blitzkrieg.
No, not at all.
Different Blitzkrieg, damn it.
Yes, different Blitzkrieg, damn. But without much further ado, I do want to get to our first guest. He is patiently waiting on the phone, ready to speak, and it is Black Magic Shaka. Like I said, Shaka's been around a while. We're going to get into how he broke in. His style, which is a very eclectic style, I do say. So here we go after his music. Onto the show. This is Black Magic Shaka. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Evening, guys. Believe it or not, I'm actually recovering from a bit of a training injury I sustained yesterday, but that didn't exactly stop me from ticking.
Okay, so what I wanted to get into first was you breaking into this business. Where did it happen? Who trained you? And let's get those stories.
Oh wow, that's a fairly easy one to answer. I broke in about August of 1998, in Philadelphia, in South Philly.
And hell yeah.
What prompted that whole thing was if anybody remembers the Grand Wrestling Alliance that started running the year before 1997. And what had happened was I tried to go over to where those guys were training over at Hawkins Gym. But I didn't have the schedule for it. Found out there was another school the following year, and it was actually Hard Rock Hamilton School, Soul City Wrestling. So I started off there, And what I didn't realize until a couple months later when I did eventually start going to Hawkins Gym was I actually broke in the middle of a turf war with the promotions in Philadelphia at the time. Like I said, I remember, like you guys mentioned, the aforementioned Grand Wrestling Alliance. When I saw them, these guys were pretty much poised to take over or pick up where Heyman was about to leave off when he was leading ECW into a bigger platform after doing, the Barely Legal pay-per-view and so forth. And what happened on Grand Wrestling Alliance in the grassroots section of the indie bit in Philly was it turned into this big, nasty thing where, it could have gotten big enough to where they could have picked up after Heyman. It didn't. So I kind of languished with everybody else and just made my own way from there. And, it was a big chaotic period, from 1999 to about, I would say, 2002, 2003, something like that. So
what was going on during that time period? During that time period, you just said, it was just kind of shaky? You were just trying to pick up bookings where you could?
Basically, everybody was. Because you had guys running shows, and everybody else that worked somewhere else kept getting on the shows at the same time. Like, personally, I jumped around where I could. Because after I left Harvard Hamilton's gym, I had went under the wing of one Captain Rick Adams, and he started running Infinity Wrestling Federation in the Northeast. And from there, I jumped around a little bit with him, a couple other people that I knew from that area who had also worked at ECW. Like, I had the honor of working with vets like Larry Winters, I believe, who trained had to do with hand-in training with Sandman. Worked with guys like Ghetto Blaster. You'll probably hear that name again later, so watch for it. like I said, a whole bunch of guys there. We just jumped around. Like Triple WA was still running in the farmers market over in Downingtown before it became the Home Depot. Was like in early '99. Yeah. So places like that. So I was working with those guys. Like my first road trip was 6 months in with Captain Rick, Dan Haney, and Johnny Rebel, and. And that was out in Indianapolis in Valentine's Day weekend of 99, which was interesting because we drove across Ohio in a snowstorm. When we drove back, it was clear. crazy stuff like that, And at the same time I was breaking in, I was actually studying a very obscure kung fu discipline from Vietnam called Seven Mountains. So that pretty much got incorporated with what I was learning when I got in the ring. So I mixed all that together. And it wound up coming back full circle because some of that stuff kind of like entailed what I ended up learning again when I went back to Thailand. Go figure.
That's a perfect place to go because I was going to ask, has your style always been as eclectic as it is now? Did you start out trying to have that eclectic style?
Not really. I'm just weird that way. I just stumble into things. That's just how I am. I look into one thing, I stumble into something else. And it winds up not going along with the current that everybody else does, as it happens. So, everybody else, like I might know about maybe a couple of kids, like one in five might sit there and take up a taekwondo. Somebody else will take up boxing. Somebody else will take up karate. I'll be the one to take up something that nobody really heard of that's related to that. So I was like, okay, that'll work cool. That's just what happened with me. I wind up stumbling to an obscure discipline of kung fu that actually had Muay Thai and all the other stuff in it, like all the other disciplines from the surrounding countries, like Vietnam, Thailand, Burma, more cursive technique, and it all still made sense anyway, which sometimes could have been kind of frustrating to some of the people I was training with because they tell me to block a punch and I'm doing something totally different from what they learned. But I made it work, so... But back during the time frame from like up until about 2001, 2002, like everybody's trying to run in Philadelphia, and anybody else that didn't have a show at the time, they're all trying to get on the same shows. So that's when it was like Dodge City, as compared to the ghost town it is now. And around the end of 2002, I started like everybody else was doing Highspot.com and everything, and I used to get a lot of shoot videos. And one of the ones that I bought, one of the last ones I bought from them, at that time was Magnum TA, and he said something that made a lot of sense and nobody ever picked up on at the time because everybody was still trying to figure, you know, stay local. They were doing the whole – they were trying to do Heyman All Too Well by trying to stay local and do their own thing. And Magnum TA said, never break into your home territory. I thought about that, and it made sense because when you think about it, break into your home territory, what's going to happen? You already got the guys that were there before you. And I went through this whole thing. Like, unless you prove yourself or you pick a side or whatever or try to get into a clique, you know, you're not going to get that far, first of all, because somebody was there before you. Then you have to sit up there and pray to somebody else. You either get better enough to take their place or somebody craps out. Because it was pretty darn congested when I broke in. A lot of guys that I knew when I broke in at the time are not in the business anymore, especially not in Philly, to my knowledge. And the other thing you're going to do is you're not going to get that far. You're not going to learn that much in your home territory because everybody knows the same style. You're not going to learn anything more after that. This is one of the reasons why people don't understand when you frown upon something like backyard wrestling because you're just playing around with your friends. You're not going to learn a thing from your friends. You're just going to sit up there and watch the TV and, ooh, I want to try that. And one of the guys, and one of the things that I learned in one of my first shows was from Bobo Brazil Jr., and he said it like this: if you saw it on TV, don't do it. Translation, if you didn't train it, don't do it, because you're going to get hurt, somebody else is going to get hurt. Now, going back to the Magnum TA thing, you don't break into your home territory. Luckily for me, people, because of the fact that I actually, people noticed that I kept studying, I listened. Kept like this, what you're supposed to do in a locker room. You keep your eyes open, keep your ears open. You don't say anything unless spoken to. And because of that, like people like Ron Starr got in other people's ears. Next thing I know, my phone's ringing at home, and I'm being asked to go on a road to different states. Like in early 2001, I get a call to go to Tennessee with me, Mark Myers. Once again, under his influence. And Ron and I, we've been in the same side of the ring together. We've been across the ring from each other. He's one of the last mentors I had when I broke in. And oddly enough, because of him, it got me down south. I just didn't know when it was going to happen, but it happened in 2003. But the moves were being made the following year, on the previous year, in 2001, 2003. With a guy who's running down in D.C. called Capital City Wrestling. And what we didn't realize was it was kind of like a West Coast, East Coast version of what they were trying to do out west. It became TNA. They were using some of the guys over there. They wanted to use minority wrestlers. Like, I don't know if you remember the Ghetto Mafia or not.
Oh, yeah.
So I swiped to those guys. We tried out for that. We didn't know it was going to become TNA. This was back in 2000. At the same time, I was working on getting my license when New York was regulated to have licenses through with Black Sultan. He was going to run Cyberspace Wrestling Federation, but I never got a chance to work with him. And of course, I'm referring to the late Billy Firehawk. So 2003, the only place I wound up working once a month, I found myself riding Greyhound back and forth to Washington, D.C. to work for Capital City Wrestling. And because of that, the following year, 2004, I wound up through other people I work with Massive Mike and Alex Arias, who ran Capital City Wrestling. The guy who played foreman for the locker room was Massive Mike. He decided to run in Delaware through Maximum Championship Wrestling, which is kind of like a sporadic run, but he's still trying to make it work. But that's been like 9 years now. And in 2004, it was him in Delaware. I got to work in Kaida Pro Wrestling in Virginia around that same time period. Because of some of the guys we worked for in Capital City, Lord Everett DeVore, I believe, used to work for WCW. I got work in North Carolina through Piedmont Championship Wrestling. That was kind of like the old Omega stomping grounds for the Hardys. And let's see, also in Virginia later on that year was, I think it was National Independent Championship Wrestling. I know it was NICW. And the guys that worked with them through Dragon Frost I got in what's now called NWA Fusion, which was back then NWA Virginia.
Yeah.
And I got to work with, let me see, Pharaoh and the late Prince Malik, who passed last year, and we became the Sons of Ra. We had the last revival of the their version of the six-man titles for NWA. That was in 2004-2005. I think that was the last time my name ever popped up in a wrestling magazine when it was still somewhat significant. From there, 2005, I ran into Ghetto Blaster again in MCW, and he was working in Galaxy Extreme Pro Wrestling in Georgia. So we did that for about a year and a half, and I wound up working in Germany from 2006 off and on. Go figure. That's the quick timeline.
Jeez.
Yeah. So I've been here, there, and everywhere.
It have been blown off like...
Told.
You just did three of my questions. I got nothing left. Now, how long did it take you to establish a steady schedule? When you went from working to, like, maybe one weekend a month to, like, almost every weekend or almost every week?
I still have the same work principles I did before the last 10 years. I just play it by ear. If I'm available for a weekend... And if I got access to transportation, bang, I'm there. I mean, because of that, that just led to me being in about as many states and countries as I had time in. And it'll be about, I would say, 15 years come August I've been in. Since then, I've done what? I've worked in 11 states, including the District of Columbia, and 5 countries, and titles in 3 of those countries.
Now, how did you get the call to go overseas?
Now, that, believe it or not, came through my old partner, Brickwall Bradley, Chris Crude, who's also my first student. He brought to my attention back in early 05 that a man from Holland, his name was Twine Kreft, he did wrestling interviews, and I contacted him. We did an interview, and he just asked a question, like, what would it take for Shaka to come wrestle in Europe? And I said, that's easy, just airfare, and I just got to get my passport. Well, sure enough, this is like not quite 7 years in, and my father had a little, I guess he was challenging me. He said, by 7 years in, I'll get sick of the business. So I said, okay, I'll take that as a dare. 7 years in, that's when I got my passport. Then I started emailing Twan gave me a list of all the promoters he can get his hands on. Mm-hmm. And I emailed each of those promoters over in Europe, I don't care what country it was from, and I think it was one or two from Denmark. The one Danish guy was like a Hulk Hogan lookalike. I was like, okay, yeah. Not too sure about that one. So the guys, one of the other guys that got that back in touch with me, I think was Bill Klondike. I think it was Klondike. I think it was. I can't remember. But I know he ran Dutch Pro Wrestling. And before I could even spit out a figure, I said, I can't afford you. I was like, okay, well, at least I got some kind of a bite. The two promotions that got back in touch with me was German Stampede Wrestling and, wow. and I believe it was Freestyle Wrestling in Holland. Oddly enough, they were running that same weekend, so they penciled me in. So I got a plane ticket to go over to Schiphol in Holland, in Amsterdam, flew over that weekend, did German Stampede, and the guy that I work, he had 2 years in, now the guy's a freaking powerhouse. His name is John Kay. They call him Bad Bones, German Psycho. I don't know if you heard of him, but he was my first match in Germany, and it's weird because it's back when I was doing the whole Crimson Assassin, I was still doing a gimmick. The whole Crimson Assassin thing, by the way, was the influence for what people saw as Boogeyman. Believe it or not, they got it from me. They got that from me. And what that was, I'm gonna tell you now. That was a combination of one of my biggest influences in wrestling when I grew up watching it were the Road Warriors and the Great Muta. So the funky leather armor that you saw, I had that made from a guy, his name was Elad, Dale Elad, is out of Colorado. So he made the armor. I found him on eBay years ago, and I ended up getting access to his stuff, and I became kind of a steady customer of his. So I bought some of his armor, and the makeup. Well, I used to wear contact lenses and just black makeup, but that's not going to show up too well in badly lit areas. So that's where the red came in. And of course, I actually got the idea during the red mist. I watched a match between Liger and Muta, where Liger takes off the mask, his face is painted, he gets Muta back with red mist. I'm like, okay, that's it, done. Done. Crimson Assassin came in somewhere in that bit, you know. I mean, from 2000 to 2004, I was, oh my God, what did I call myself? The Cruiserweight Nightmare. But one of the guys I was working with in Maximum Championship had the name Chris Nightmare. I was like, okay, that's taken, never mind. I'll be cool about it. Even though the guy was younger, I was like, what the heck, I'm going to switch that up anyway. And Crimson Assassin was born from 2004 to 2008. And it made a bigger tear when I was over in Europe, because after the whole thing with Holland, Freestyle Wrestling was the next day. It's funny because when they first saw me, I had 300 Germans yelling at me, "Can you dig that, Shaka?" I said, "Okay." They did that again my second trip too. But it was cool. I got a good reception out of that. And I got a call back with one of the guys I networked with in Holland the second day, the day before I left. But the guys I met there, I ran into Steve Carino for the second time. I ran into him before when he ran the show up in the Northeast. He actually lived, it actually wasn't too far from where I live. I ran into Bret Hart that first trip, Davey Smith, Molly Holly. I can't remember her last name. I remember her first name was Nora. I ran into a bunch of people there. The second day in Holland, that's when I met my future, what turned out to be my future tag team partner from Belgium. His name is Bull. He was the head trainer for Flemish Wrestling Force. And Crazy Johnny Tiger, who runs the second biggest promotion in Germany, which is Deutsche Wrestling Alliance. So working with these guys off and on after that second trip, that's how I got my next couple of titles over in Europe. My first match in Belgium was against Bull, who was the FWF heavyweight champion. I beat him, and I lost the belt to him later on in the show, in the main event. And the following week, we went to Deutsche Wrestling Alliance on a road trip. So we kind of patched that whole thing up. And the Flemish guys wound up going to Germany behind that trip. Mm. Next time we're back over, we're going back and forth, back and forth. So in 2008, or should I say late 2007, we went up for a bid for the DWA tag titles. Those things are cursed, I swear to God. Because Bull messed up his knee, tore some ligaments, and we got approached by one of the other promoters in Germany, Eddie Steinblock, who runs what's called the Catch Cup. And that was around the same time I was about to, I mean, like a year before I killed my gimmick, but before that happened, the following year, a couple of months later, 2008, Groundhog Day weekend, Bull and I, we ended up winning the Flemish Wrestling Force tag titles on a Friday. Saturday, we're over in Germany, and we get the tag titles over in DWA. So now we got two tag titles in two different countries. About a week or so later, I come back stateside, and I get the Maximum Championship title for the second time. So now I'm sitting here with three titles.
Jeez.
In three different countries. Actually, it would have been four, but the other promotion was defunct after the first show, so I won't even count it.
Well.
But yeah. And that was the same year I killed my gimmick, and there was no more Crimson Assassin. It became Black Magic, but I'll get into that in a second.
Now, I understand that you made the transition to MMA at some point. What made you decide to make that jump from professional wrestling into mixed martial arts? That's a kind of a serious step.
It is. Curiosity, for one. Because I remember watching, remember when it was still called No Holds Barred Fighting, with the whole UFC, Shooto, and all that stuff. And what really got me interested was guys like Dan Severn and Ken Shamrock. Now, remember when I mentioned Ghetto Blaster?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, huh?
Believe it or not, he used to be on a road with, he used to go on a road and wrestle Dan Severn.
Whoa.
Oh, world after all. But yeah. Now the kicker is, I got a little curious. Because I was upset with my training, because I mean I fell into that whole trap of you know the whole bodybuilding regimen and all that stuff, and it wasn't enough. So I started picking up, you know, the summer of 08, I started picking up MMA magazines, and I started getting ideas, you know, the good ideas for training, this, that, and the third. And something just felt missing for me. I was like, okay, I didn't feel I was going. I felt as though I learned all I was going to learn. I'm not going to learn anything else. And mm-hmm. I'm not going to say I got tired. I was frustrated. And I was pretty much done with the gimmick. I'm like, there's nothing else I can do with the darn thing. I mean, okay, I've been in 3 countries already. Like, right after we won, Bull and I won the titles, I ended up going on the road in around St. Paddy's Day of 08. I spent a week. I did a week-long tour, basically. I did 5 days over in Ireland. Joey Legend was there. Sandman. In fact, it was a retirement tour where Test was on, and then he passed away the following year. So he was on tour with him.
Right.
Gangrel was there. Chris Massa was there. So we had Heidenreich was there. I had a couple of matches with him. The first one I tore, I tore my meniscus in my left knee. Still had to wrestle 2 days
That'll
before
do
I
it.
Left. But, oh, yeah. But right after that summer, I kind of got frustrated, and I was like, okay, I want to know more stuff, but I don't think I'm going to learn it here. So what wound up happening was I killed the whole Crimson Assassin thing. I was like, look, boom, done, no more gimmick. I don't care what anybody says, no more. And they're like, well, what about, like, look, I was Shaka long before I put on face paint. So if I was over before – if I can do my thing before I put on the face paint, people can respect me after the fact. I mean, they're not paying to see face paint. They're seeing the guy who's wearing it. And I still feel that way to this day. And people keep asking me, like, the way I come out now, is that a gimmick? No, it's not an MMA gimmick. It's not a Muay Thai gimmick. This is me. It's just me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I changed my training and everything. Instead of just going for bodybuilding and the fitness, looks is everything. I'm going for conditioning. So I train to go. I don't train for show. I mean, after a while you realize you can be the most ripped guy in the world, but let's face it, steroids ain't going to cut it, and I value my liver very much. So everything you guys see in there with me is real. There's nothing fake about the muscle. There's nothing fake about what I do, about the technique. Everything is legitimate, and that's what it used to be. When I started learning more about the other wrestling techniques, the guys at one of my gyms that I train at, turns out he was and the guy's like about, what, 5'4", 140, and he'll kill you. Because, I mean, he'll kill you. I mean, I'll put it that way. Come to find out, the guy, he learned, let me see, study Taekwondo. If you see the calluses built up on his knuckles and everything, study Taekwondo under his father. Study Judo. Trains with an Olympic level judoka now at the gym. The guy's from Morocco. He's a purple belt in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. So, I mean, what more could you ask for? And he saw the way I train, and believe it or not, that's how I got the name Black Magic. The whole thing with the MMA bit, I started training just before the state of Pennsylvania got cleared for a competition for MMA, and that was in 09. So what happened was I found out the first MMA event in Philadelphia was supposed to happen in the Blue Horizon, and the guy at the gym told me about it. I said, okay, I'll, like, put me up, I'll go for it. Didn't quite happen. It got postponed, so it never went off. I think it was for Victory Fight League. So the next time was in October of 2009. That fateful day, I wound up taking, well, I was 37 years old at the time. Now, there's a bylaw in the regs that says you cannot, I mean, you have a cutoff age. After the age of 36, you cannot compete in the state of Pennsylvania without a CAT scan. Well, I wound up taking that fight at the age of 37, a month and a half before I turned 38, without a CAT scan, because I was an alternate. So, and the guy who set the fight up for me, he gave me the fight on 2 weeks' notice. That fight should not have happened. I should not have been in that fight at all. The conditioner was there. But I was already at a well-conditioned 195, light heavyweight, basically, cruiserweight, if you want to call it that, but light heavyweight. And he had the bright idea of putting me in the next weight class down. So I had 2 weeks to cut from 195 to 185. And the guy he brought in for my training, that was a disaster. These guys, ugh. Threw my whole game out the window, my whole conditioning game, everything was done. And what happens is, as a result, I wound up going on that fight damaged goods. Matter of fact, they did something you're not supposed to do that close to a fight. They wanted to spar. Go ahead, gear. And the guy that I was originally sparring with didn't feel good, so he got the guy to set the fight up for me to spar with him and spar with me instead. And the guy's, what, 6'3", and about 250, 300 pounds, and he supposedly boxed in the Navy. Found out the hard way he didn't know how to throw a punch, pull his punches. So I ate two nice little right jabs, yeah. One got me in the right and the left eye. The other one got me in my chin. The good news, we found out I didn't have a glass jaw.
Now, oh, that's good. Well, yeah. That's
positive.
Yeah, right. Now, fast forward to the fight. The fight took place in the ECW arena. I used my actual ring name. And I'll tell you, it's on Go Fight Live. They used my actual ring name, against a guy named Scott Strasky. From upstate New York. I believe he's from Attica. Went to a judo school. That's all I know. Now, I call that the longest 3 minutes of my life because, okay, amateur mixed martial arts in Pennsylvania, you got three rounds. They all last 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking 6 minutes all told. Well, that should tell you, if I say the longest 3 minutes, that means it got stopped right in the middle of the second round. Now, what happened there? Ground game is probably what saved my life. We're talking two overtrained guys sweating half the darn death. And by the way, I weighed in at 182 and a half that morning. It was the last time I saw Greg serve in a minute. But so guy couldn't do much with me on the ground. Now, I couldn't do too much with him considering I didn't get to go over all the techniques I liked as much as I'd like to. Couldn't do it. So second round, going to stand-up. God, when we're just swinging for the fences. Oh, and the commentator, who I think was the guy who actually owned the promotion, ripped me a new one. Like I said, the fight's on Go Fight Live, so, I mean, it's crazy as all get out. He ripped me a new one. I went for a leg lock, and the guy's going, woo, Ric Flair, because I'm the one putting the figure four, and I'm trying to go for a straight leg lock, because you can only do two types of leg locks in MMA in Pennsylvania. You can only do a straight leg lock or a knee bar. You can't do anything else. No, you can't do heel hooks. You can't do toe holds, none of that stuff. They won't let you do it. They won't even let you do can opener and neck cranks. But
really?
So it's kind of limited, so you got to be creative. So second round was all stand-up, so we're going for it. And remember when I said I got clocked in the eye two nights before? Well,
yeah.
I got clocked again, twice. And he went to go home with a black eye. Me? I think I had a crushed orbital rim. All I know is when I looked at my vision, you see me, if there was no cell, I'm actually trying to get my vision in the fight. The vision in my left eye, I kid you not, did like a vertical jump for like 5 seconds.
Mm.
And I'm on the defense and I'm panicking. I was like, okay, I don't care what happens. I'm going to try and survive this fight. I'm on panic mode, but I'm not trying to go blind in this sucker. Well, the good news is I didn't go blind, but I just I got stuck to just training, and let's see. I was actually going to fight the following year for David Feldman's promotion. I think it was Matrix, but that's when we found out about the loophole, and I forgot about it because they don't have it where it's supposed to be. Because I got a call from David Feldman telling me, well, I just got a call from Greg Serve saying you can't fight because you're 38. Because of the whole cutoff age thing. And he told him, well, you guys didn't say anything when he was 37, which they didn't. Then I figured out reason being, it was too close to the fight, and I was an alternate. So I was like, okay, they let me squeak by on that one. But, yeah, it's legit. It's in a book. So far as I know, I'm the only professional wrestler to compete in mixed martial arts in the ECW arena to date. And it's
there
in the book.
Go. There you go. Yeah,
and
well,
book.
You will be.
I don't care if it's 0-1, but it happened.
Hey, you will be because the EW arena is not going to hold that anymore. So,
no.
Yeah.
But
is there any
the only other reason? I, I mean, I got the bragging rights for it, but only other reason why I can't get any more hype for it is because we didn't get any press. So it is what it is.
Is there any chance that
otherwise?
Yeah, my question, is there any chance you're going to try another fight, or is it just you're too old in Pennsylvania?
I don't know. I mean, it's not going to happen in the state of Pennsylvania if I do. I also played with the notion of trying it again in Europe. If it does happen on the East Coast, it'll probably more likely happen in Jersey, but I have to make sure I get all my ducks in a row first. But I think before I do that, the conditioning's there, but there are other. I realize there are other avenues outside of just being in a cage, because a lot of the guys there, like especially when they're working on ground game, some of these guys are actually going to grappling tournaments and stuff. Like a couple of guys I spoke to in the back, a couple of cats, they competed over in Grappler's Quest, stuff like that. You had the guys going over to the Nagas. You got a bunch of places, you know what I mean? So I figure, okay, I got lucky and squeaked by on that fight as far as I did, because apparently the guy that I fought, well, I found out that he had another fight, and he tried the same thing with me in the first round that he tried with his next opponent, and the guy took his back and made him tap in the first round with a rear naked choke. Go figure. So, and like I said, the irony is the guy came from a judo school. And since then, what I figured I would do, like I would say about 2 weeks after I came back from Thailand, I went to a grappling seminar out in the West Coast in North Hollywood, run by Gokor Chavichian. Now, if you're not familiar, if anybody's not familiar with who Gokor is, this is a guy who came from Armenia at the age of 17 about 30 years ago, and he went to the West Coast, and he trained under Judo Jean LaBelle. Now, this all goes back in full circle. MMA and pro wrestling go hand in hand. Now, nobody knows who Judo Jean LaBelle is. Judo Jean LaBelle's stepfather was Roy Shire. His mother ran the Olympic Coliseum.
Oh.
Now, and the other part about the judo bit, he was a top-notch amateur judo competitor, and he had the first, let me see, I believe he had the first boxer versus grappler thing back in the 60s. He choked out Milo Savage in the fourth round. So,
wow.
I mean, like I said, that keeps going back and forth. And the thing with Judo Jean LaBelle is his background wasn't just exclusively judo. The guys are in his time frame, these guys were all the old catch wrestlers, so he knows a lot of catch wrestling as well. So if you pick up his old grappling encyclopedia, all that stuff what you find out about with Brazilian jiu-jitsu, catch wrestling had it first. But if you go back to the Brazilian jiu-jitsu roots, the guy who taught Carlos Gracie was a guy who wasn't just from Japan. Akira Maeda also went by the name of Count Koma. He didn't just know jiu-jitsu. He also was a catch wrestler. Goes all the way around. So there's some catch style in 3JJ as well. So I figure, okay, you go back to Gokor. Gokor has his own grappling stuff. Now, if you want to go for the modern stuff, you know the guys that came out of his camp, Carol Parisian.
Yeah.
Manny Gamburian.
Mm-hmm.
And they trained with Ronda Rousey.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And she got a bronze, I think, or the gold in judo over in Beijing. So this stuff is the real deal. So you're talking Olympic level judo, all that stuff. And me, I try to get my grubby little hands on every little discipline I can. I mean, it doesn't just stop at just catch style. It doesn't stop at Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I try to throw in some sambo. Like I said, anything you see me throw in a ring, it's the real stuff. So I don't BS around that sort of thing at all.
Now, speaking of that, one of the last matches I had the privilege to actually see you in was at Loco Wrestling, you and Black Dragon going for the title. And that match I really thought was the match of the night. What you guys did in there really told a good story, and there was actually a reason behind it, I think. You didn't really say it at the time, but go ahead and tell us about that match.
Well, I'll tell you now. Dragon and I, that was, I guess you can call that match took about 6 or 7 years to actually pull off. And the reason behind that was Dragon and I, We actually have a common friend. I mean, where I grew up in Philadelphia in West Oak Lane, he grew up around the corner from me. And we were tight with, we consider them brothers, we were tight with the cousin of, if you recall, the Smoke.
Yeah.
Yes, we were all tight. The Smoke's cousin lived right directly behind me in the neighborhood. And Smoke gave Dragon the nickname Little Shaka because he reminded him of me. And he wanted to get him in touch with me to train him. And he was kind of like my student, protege, mentor sort of relationship. And he was itching to have a match with me for the longest. So what happened was when he got the Northeast title in Loco, he actually called me out to wrestle. And believe it or not, we were wishing that, because our friend Will, down Smoke's cousin, he passed last March. And he was one of the guys, like, when I was doing the last few matches in Philadelphia, we used to ride around and go to the shows and whatnot. And, we were, like, constant companions. We were, like, we were, like, basically running buddies at the time. We were wishing that Will was there to see that match because he got a kick out of the whole thing because we all knew each other. But what happened was when he called me out, I guess he didn't think I had it because his argument was I'm not as well known despite my background, as far as, Europe and the rest of the States. He didn't think I was as well known as he was in Philadelphia. I was like, now, you can't be too further from the truth on that one, actually, because case in point, one of the last matches I had in Philly before I had that fight in the arena was when Dino Santa ran Triple WA in Holmesburg Boys and Girls Club in June of 2009. Now I have a history with that building because I used to get my butt handed to me by Captain Rick Adams and half the doggone roster back in 1999 when the Infinity Wrestling Federation ran in that building. And the last time that last time I was in that building was a week after 9/11 because nobody else ran around that time, and we did a benefit show, and I darn near got killed in a three-way tag elimination match, and it was by myself because Brickwall Bradley or Chris Crew, he was suspended, so I had to sit up there and defend our tag titles for Captain Rick Adams' other promotion, Cutting Edge Wrestling Federation. And the other teams were the Puerto Rican SWAT teams in Hollywood Inc.
Okay.
And I darn near got my ass handed to me in that match. You got one guy going against four guys. I mean, it wasn't pretty. So behind that happening, that was the last time I stepped foot in that ring in that building. That was a week after 9/11 in 2001. I didn't step foot again in that building again until 2009, and that was for Dino Santa. So, and people still remember me, so it's kind of like coming home. So you figure, you take 8 years almost, or 7.5 if you want to be a dick about it, nearly 7 to 8 years pass in that same building, and Dragon saying I wasn't that well known. Now, if you put the match where you had it a month and a half ago out there in you want to call it Southampton or whatever, we'll stick to Southampton if you want to call it that. You're talking just outside of Philadelphia as opposed to Holmesburg. Okay, granted, he can say I'm not as well known, but neither is he. I mean, he's just still getting proven, and I think that was his first title. Now, you put him up against me, bang. You got yourself a nice little clash. And he gave me as good as he got. Unfortunately, I got a little replay of what happened at the end because all I recall was an uppercut. I was like, that felt more than just a regular fist, and come to find out I was right. So like I said, I know I don't have a glass jaw. And next thing I know, I'm trying to figure out what the hell nailed me underneath that hand. Come to find out somebody threw him a chain. But I'm not too sure. I think it was Tony Badlands that handed him a chain or something like that. So that's fine. That's all well and good. I mean, but I can guarantee you after that match, he's not going to ask me for a rematch again anytime soon. But if he wants to, if he feels froggy, though, he feels more than happy to leap. I don't care.
Yeah,
but I think I'm proving my point to him.
Is there any other place that you're working currently? I think you're down in PDW in Delaware.
I actually was. Matter of fact, on what's running on top of that was, remember when I mentioned Maximum Championship Wrestling?
Yeah.
Well, it's still around, just not in the full capacity that it used to be. So, what happened was it was running, it was basically a double show. Maximum Championship Wrestling is still around, but it was running along with Power Pro Wrestling down there. As a matter of fact, a lot of the MCW alum was also on a roster for PPW. So what just happened, what transpired a couple weeks ago was I went up, I had a little problem with the now former television champion because they televised MCW matches down in, I think, Maryland, in some parts of Maryland. And apparently somebody wanted to call me out, and it was the TV champion, Monster Myers. If you can, if you will, imagine a smaller version of Cremator, that would be Monster Myers.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, because this happened, like, last year. Like, I had a match there going against the Maximum Championship Cruiserweight Champion, Mark Angel, and Monster Myers comes out at the end of my match. So, okay, fine. Apparently, he has some kind of beef with me or something like that, and I guess he thinks I'm like, because I'm getting older or whatever. So it's kind of like, I think, karma, because I used to make a bit of a tear when I was down in Delaware, like for Maximum Championship and Dynamite Championship Wrestling. And I used to tell him all the time, I don't just win titles, I make statements. I was one of the longest reigning No Limits champions over in Dynamite. I had the U.S. title twice, as well as a unified title twice over in Maximum when it was in Delaware and in Pennsylvania. And the weird thing is, if you remember me talking about the NWA Virginia six-man titles before, now around that same time, Maximum Championship became an affiliate for the American Wrestling Association, the AWA. So
okay.
when I got the U.S. title back again, it was under the AWA, and that was at the same time I was one-third of the six-man title. So that's the first time in about almost 40 years, I think, that somebody held titles in both the National Wrestling Alliance and the American Wrestling Association.
Okay.
It may not have been the main titles, but it still happened. I even asked El Gagne about that. So more bragging rights for me. And apparently some people over in Belgium caught wind of that too, and, hey, they just ran with it. So I'm like, no problem.
Yeah.
But Myers had his thing, so I nailed him. So now I'm holding the Maximum Championship TV title, and also work for a smaller promotion over in Tamaqua, PA, which isn't too far from Hazleton, Allentown, the Elite Generation Wrestling. And do you remember Lucifer Grimm?
I do not.
Okay. We go back to around like 2000. We worked for Robin Q. Hunt in Northern Jersey. We tagged up once against Kid USA and King Mike Kahlua.
Okay.
When I ran into him in EGW, and I hate using the initials, but I'll do it here for the sake of argument. But when I ran into him a couple of years ago when I first went to EGW, he was the current heavyweight champion. Well, guess who he lost to last year? That would be me. So now I'm holding two belts again.
Okay. Okay.
Technically, it would have been three titles because I was over in England back in 2011, and I worked for Power Trip Wrestling, and I became the internet champion. And they let me defend the title over here in the States, which I did. I did the first defense over in Vegas for, I think it was NCAA Pro Wrestling, and then I defended it again in EGW. Against, I think it was the Sheik or something like that. And after that, the promoter decided to just mothball the promotion and do another project. So I never lost the belt. Go figure.
Okay. And the last thing I wanted to ask you is, where can people catch up with you? Because we're running out of time here, but where can people catch up with you and that sort of thing?
Well, that's easy. You can find me on Facebook, considering I keep forgetting to update my website. But I'm under my real name. That's happened after I started my column. You can find me under my real name, Harold Reddick, R-E-D-D-I-C-K. I also go by the name Red. I also do my column on occasion. It's now on video, The Other Side of Ropes. That's where you get a little frontline point of view of how the wrestling business is from wrestler's point of view. But I'm usually on Facebook 9 times out of 10. I poke in and out. I'm kind of like here, there, and everywhere. But like I said, my regular main bits right now is EGW, Maximum Championship through Power Pro, and Loco, or any other place I can get my filthy hands on. I just jump around, man. I pride myself on being an off-roader.
Okay, this was certainly, I think we only glazed the surface with you, Shaka, so we're going to get you back on and talk more about all these travels that you've had.
Not a problem.
All right, but it was certainly a pleasure, and you have a good night, sir.
Oh, my pleasure, too. Have a good one, man.
Okay, so
that's awesome.
That was Shaka. We'll be right back after this.
Indeed.
So that was Shaka, quite the interview.
Indeed.
Yes.
I could talk to him for hours and just ask him about each place he went to and any specifics about any country, for crying out loud.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
God, he's well-traveled. Like, that's one of the most well-traveled wrestlers I've ever talked to.
Oh, certainly, certainly.
Well-spoken, too. I mean, that just goes on. just go.
Yeah.
Spin a tail.
Unlike us tonight, I'm a little under the weather. But, Omega, we have business to attend to.
Indeed. Let's get to it.
So, Omega, this past weekend, it was UFC 159.
It was.
We were 30 seconds away from a major disaster.
Yeah, I would agree. We would have been 30 seconds away from a larger disaster.
So, without giving too much away, the main event was, of course, John Jones taking on Chael Sonnen for the light heavyweight championship. Last week, we both lamented the fact that Chael Sonnen shouldn't have even gotten this fight, that he only got it because he's a good marketer, quite frankly. And the fight happened. Things went pretty much according to plan. John Jones comes out, puts Sonnen down, what was it, 3 or 4 times. However,
decisively.
Yes, yes. However, somewhere along the line, he broke his big toe. And yeah. If Chael Sonnen could have lasted 27 more seconds from that final barrage that Jones put on him, we would have had a new light heavyweight champion.
Yes, by default. The question is, do you believe the ref stopped it too early? I don't. I thought it was stopped. It was a good call. And that's just not just because I think that Chael Sonnen didn't deserve this fight, but I mean, I realistically thought he was getting beat. He was getting pounded. He was turtling up, and he wasn't really defending himself. You know, but, yeah, to think about the fact that had it gone to the end of the round and John Jones, with that injury, wouldn't have been able to answer the bell because the doctors wouldn't have let him fight on that toe. Now, I mean, the bone was sticking out of that toe.
Yeah.
That was a a really nasty, nasty break. Yeah, that we would have had Chael Sonnen, light heavyweight champion, who got pounded for 5 minutes.
Yeah, so I was talking to you before the show started, and I said, even though he was decisively handled in that round, and he lost that round, they would have went to the judges. He wouldn't have answered the bell, so we would have had a new champ.
New champ, yes. This isn't like pro wrestling. You do actually have to – you don't have to – you can get off on a technicality and still get the belt, so –
Yeah, I didn't know that. I thought it would went. I don't know. I thought they would have went to judges' scorecards.
Well, unlike three other fights on the card, this one went to two other fights on the card went to judges' decision based on injuries.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to start out with something from the preliminary card. It was an FX fight. Sarah McMahon defeating Gaff in the first round. How do you feel about that one? Do you think McMahon is a force to be reckoned with, or what?
I think she is. Now, that doesn't mean I think she's ready for Rousey yet, but she's on her way. We didn't get to see a lot of her stand-up. When she got in the clinch, Gaff got some pretty good knees in. But once McMahon got Gaff down to the ground, it was pretty much over at that point. She moved fairly quickly to a mounted crucifix and just started dropping fists into the Gaff's face. It was an impressive victory. It was a dominant victory. She certainly has the wrestling pedigree to be a person who is not going to be intimidated by Rousey's judo. She's probably not going to be taken down as easily as some of Rousey's other opponents, but I don't know that she's quite ready yet. We haven't seen a lot of her stand up. That being said, we haven't seen a lot of Rousey's stand up.
That's true.
I think the fact that Rousey and Kat Zingano are going to be out for several months filming Tough, I think that is only good for Sarah McMahon, because she should get another fight in between that time, and I think that gives her the ability to work on her stand-up, have another fight under the UFC banner in the big bright lights, get that experience she needs, and then she'll be ready for a championship fight.
I like McMahon. I've been following her career for a little bit, so this was exciting that she decisively won.
Yes. I think it's only good. I think we've had three women's fights in the UFC, and all three have delivered.
Yes. Now, OSP defeated Vellante, and that was a technical decision.
Oh God, yeah. This was bad. It wasn't really a good fight to start with, but OSP was on the receiving end of an eye poke in the first round, we had that stuff there. OSP won that first round, but it wasn't very exciting. And then the second round, OSP returns the favor, catches Vellante with another eye poke, well in the eye, was right there. It was a bad poke. And unlike what they did for OSP, Vellante goes down on his knee, and it's immediate. The ref right there says, "What happened?" He says, "I can't see," and he calls the fight right there. It doesn't give him a chance to recover, and it was kind of boggling because we've done that before. We've certainly seen a lot of, even on this card, even with OSP in the second round, we saw the fighters getting a chance to recover from accidental eye poke. Even briefly, but I guess what I get, my understanding is when you say you can't see, then the ref has to call it. But they do not enforce that rule consistently. It's really boggling. As we'll talk about probably later, it's just these eye pokes are getting really bad.
Yeah,
really bad. So I don't know what the solution is. But I think they do need to change the rule about eye pokes. You should be get an accidental eye poke. You should get time to recover like you do from groin.
Well,
shots.
It's like, yeah, that's what I was about to say. It should be just like a groin shot. You have 5 minutes to recover from an accidental groin shot.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see. I mean, that the I won't, don't see why any foul like that where it's not. You know, shouldn't be given 5 minutes to recover. I think if you get a 12-6 elbow, you should get 5 minutes to recover.
Sure.
You know, I mean, any kind of accidental foul should be a break and you get a chance to recover. Now, I don't want them happening all the time, but you know, other than eye pokes, they don't, and groin shots, there's really nothing else that comes out a lot. But I mean, I don't see the problem with having that having that consistent rule across mixed martial arts.
It seems to make sense to me. Now, in the battle of the guys that I can't pronounce, it ended quickly.
Yes, Yancy Medeiros versus Rustam Khabilov.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. God, this is another injury that happened. Medeiros broke his right thumb in a scramble. And they called the fight right there. And unlike an accidental foul, if you get injured, it's an automatic TKO for the other fighter.
That just doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, this one really didn't get this fight didn't really get off the ground at all. And there's really nothing to be said for it because it really just kind of ended. Poorly.
Yeah.
And the second fight in a row with an injury, it was bad. You know, the first two fights on the FX card were actually pretty decent. Brian Caraway looked pretty good in his fight. McMahon looked really good. Last two fights really deflated the card. Just bad. And it just a weird night of fights.
Well,
we haven't even got to the main card yet.
Yeah, getting to the main card now. Strikeforce, Pat, is it Boom Boom or Bam Bam? Bam Bam, that's what I thought. Bam Bam Healy, coming over from Strikeforce, like I said, defeated Jim Miller, third round, rear naked choke.
Great fight. This was one of the few bright spots on the card. Really, really competitive fight all the way through. Miller was really was the better on stand up throughout the whole fight. Was really getting the better of Healy standing up. Healy was probably better on the ground, but Miller's no slouch on the ground. They were trading submissions and scrambles, and really made this a great battle all the way through. Healy does what he did in Strikeforce. He kind of wore Miller down to the point where Miller was just slowing down, couldn't, and just was losing that step. And that allowed Healy to eventually get the better of the rounds, better of the ground game, and eventually lock in the rear naked choke.
Yeah. So now the next fight for Healy, a lot of people are saying it should be the former Strikeforce lightweight champion. And that's Gilbert Melendez. Do you agree with that? Have the fourth fight between these guys?
Nah.
You're not feeling it?
I'm not feeling that. You know, I think there's other fighters for Healy to fight. I would like to see him fight someone like Donald Cerrone. I know Cerrone's got a fight coming up, but you know, I think someone like Cerrone, someone like a WEC guy. Or some. I mean, I don't want to rehash. There's plenty of lightweight fighters. We don't need to rehash previous fights.
Yeah, I get you there. Now, another fight that we haven't talked about: Phil Davis, Magalhães. What do you have to say about that one?
It's about as what we expected out of a Phil Davis fight.
Yes, I would agree.
I will say that he looked better on the stand up. He looked really. It looked very crisp, very, very precise with his striking. But he didn't want to go down to the ground with Magalhães there. He's just not going to be that guy is a three-time world Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu champion. He doesn't want to go anything to do with him on the ground, even though as good a wrestler as Phil Davis is, he doesn't want to go there. And he didn't go there. He just decided to stand up. Every time it got down to the ground, he stood up and begged Vinny to get back up. So, you know, I think we talked about this last week. Phil Davis really should have been knocked this guy out.
Oh yeah.
With the amount of punches he hit, the crispness he was hitting with, I don't think Vinny has that great a chin that he shouldn't have got knocked out for the amount of punishment that Davis was laying out. It just was another unexciting Phil Davis fight.
That's Phil Davis's MO. Now there was an exciting fight, or at least an exciting finish, and Roy Nelson and Chet Congo. Knockout 2 minutes in.
Yeah. Roy Nelson doing what Roy Nelson does. And knocking guys out. And he knocked Chet Congo right out of the UFC.
Oh, is he released? Or
Congo's been released, yes.
Really?
Came out today.
That's huge. Congo's been around forever.
Yeah, Congo's been around forever. I'm not sure. I think that it sounds to me like it was more they really couldn't come. This was Congo's last fight, and they really couldn't come up with a good contract, and the loss just gives them a reason, to let him go. It was quick. But Nelson just for the first couple of minutes, Nelson was clinching Congo against the fence. We talked about Congo's action figure physique, tall guy, got lots of leverage, and Roy Nelson was just using his, bulk for lack of a word, and just really just holding him there and controlling the clinch. And when it came back out, Nelson just winged that right hand of his, caught Congo behind the ear, drops him, and then comes in with another right uppercut as he's on the ground and puts him out, and that's it.
Vicious.
It was vicious, and it was what Roy Nelson does.
What's next for Nelson, then? Are they saying the winner of Hunt and Dos Santos, or what do they think?
They're lobbying. Daniel Cormier is lobbying for Roy Nelson.
Really? I thought Cormier doesn't have a fight, so that's right, yeah.
Cormier just fought. Just beat Frank Mir. It seems to make sense. We talked about how presuming that Junior Dos Santos wins next week and Cain Velasquez wins, probably that sets up Cain versus JDS 2 or 3, I should say.
Yeah.
So Cormier will be the odd man out in that scenario. I say give him Roy Nelson. Let's let a big wrestler with knockout power take on a submission guy with knockout power. And see what happens.
Who would you have? Who would you have on that this early if that were to happen?
I might take Nelson on that one.
Just because you can't knock him out.
You can't. Cormier is not going to knock out Nelson. I don't. No, he's not going to knock out Nelson, and I think Nelson could knock out Cormier.
Definitely.
Now Cormier could take it to the ground and control Nelson on the ground, but we know Nelson's a good on the ground.
Though we rarely see it.
He doesn't like to see it.
Yeah.
He doesn't like to do it. He wants to sit up there and do what he did this weekend. I think that's an interesting matchup. I mean, I have to think about it a little more because Cormier is that good a wrestler, and he does have power in his hands, but Roy Nelson's just a zombie.
He definitely is. Now, the co-main event was Bisping against Belcher. Last week we talked about it in detail. Belcher losing by technical decision. And there was really, even without the eye poke, this was really Bisping's fight.
Yeah, I mean, the eye poke came at the very end of the fight. There was only about, 30 seconds left, if that.
Yeah, 30 seconds. It was 4:29.
Yeah, so, but this was Bisping's fight all the way. Bisping, we talked about this last week, how Bisping's a very cerebral fighter. doesn't take a lot of risks. That was pretty evident that he was going to take that same strategy again. And he executed it to perfection. He was very cautious in the first round, and just kind of watched. And Belcher was just not doing much of anything. He wasn't really connecting. His hands were down. He didn't have any respect for Bisping's power. And not that I disagree with that assessment, because Bisping is not a guy who knocks guys out. But he also wasn't landing, you know. He wasn't – Bisping was using his evasion, we talked about last week, not taking risks until the second round. He started to pour it on a little bit more. He got a little bit more confident as Belcher slowed down, because you're not going to out-cardio Bisping. So, you know, again, Bisping just moved, used lots of movement, lots of good evasion, took the strike, took the shots when he needed to, and landed the shots when he had the opportunity. And by round three, it was all Bisping. Bisping was just pouring it on because Belcher, he sensed that Belcher was tired, and Belcher really didn't have anything for his movement.
Well, that's one thing about Belcher I've noticed is when he is, and it didn't used to be this way. It's, I think, since he came back from the injury, once he gets decisively outscored, he kind of gives up.
Yeah, it was kind of like that. I mean, he was throwing stuff, so it wasn't like he was not wasn't doing anything, but he just wasn't really it wasn't sincere, I guess. It wasn't, you know, you think of a guy who's down two rounds. We talk about this a lot in MMA. Guy is down two rounds, obviously down two rounds, just not engaging.
Yeah.
And Belcher, while he was engaging, he just didn't have the cardio, he didn't have the gas tank to go at the pace that Bisping was setting, and to go that for three rounds. It wasn't that he crumbled, but he did just kind of wore out. And by the time the eye poke got happened in round three, it was well on in Bisping's favor, and the only thing that would have changed it is a miracle finish.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, the main event that we talked about, the broken toe. Very close. How long was it? What was the official time? It was 4:30. 27 seconds, I think.
27 seconds left. 27 seconds from Chael Sonnen, light heavyweight champion.
Now, granted it didn't happen, but what would that have meant?
Immediate rematch. Pretty much. Well, not immediate, because Jones would have had to recover from the broken foot. But, I mean, that's what it would have meant. I mean, I guess if we don't really know the extent of Jones's, how long he'll be out. I don't think a broken toe is going to be that long. But
although it is a nasty broken toe,
it is a nasty broken foot. I think it would have lasted just as long until the next fight. You know, if Jones can go, you can throw Machida in there, you could throw Gustafson in there, and I'll take both those guys over Sonnen.
Well, at this point, I have to agree. I mean, Sonnen, I can't think, besides the Silva fight that he lost, the first Silva fight, I can't think of a dominant performance that he's had.
No, it's been a while. I mean, you can say his Brian Stann fight was pretty dominant. Even his fight over Nate Marquardt and Yukami, but that was 2009 and 2010.
Yeah.
You know, we're looking at his last five fights. Really, only the win over Brian Stann comes to mind. You know, Anderson Silva twice, Michael Bisping, which I kind of thought he lost that fight, and John Jones. I mean, this is a guy who's gotten by on trash talking and or testosterone. So
yeah.
You know, I think he's a great talker. He's got a hell of a future doing the UFC TV shows. You know, at this point, you know, he's not retiring. He says he wants to fight Wanderlei Silva. I'm fine with that, I guess.
Really? Why? I guess that's just kind of like a dream fight that nobody dreamt of.
Yeah, it's two name fighters. I mean, at this point, Sonnen's enough of a name that you know, you can give him name fighters. Whether or not he can actually beat them or not, I don't know. But, you know, Vanderlei's on, two guys at the tail end of their careers.
Well, Silva's definitely kind of re-energized ever since that Leben fight, so.
Certainly, but do we really think that he's going to be, you know, challenging for anything?
Well, I guess so. No.
I mean, they're kind of in the same position here. I mean, even if Sonnen wins his next fight, I mean, he's lost three title shots in two divisions. You know, what's he gonna do? So.
Yeah. All right. So coming up, the next thing on UFC's on their schedule is FX, Belfort, Rockhold. Very briefly, how do you see that one going down? These are, I don't know, Rockhold really needs this win to make a statement in UFC. Belfort, I don't know. How do you see it?
Well, I mean, Rockhold, this is going to be his first fight in the UFC. He's getting a tough test with Belfort.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is not a, you know, an easy fight for anyone coming off of that. You know, he hasn't fought in UFC yet. His last fight, he's won all his fights in the last 9 fights.
Oh, wow.
So he's definitely on a roll, but, you know, this is another, and every time I say this, these guys step up. This is a guy coming from Strikeforce, stepping up into the big leagues. Can he handle UFC caliber talent?
So far, people have.
Exactly.
The Strikeforce guy. So
it's hard to say, no way Luke Rockhold wins this fight. You know, Vitor Belfort is good. He's really good. But that being said, really, realistically, I don't know who wins this fight right now. Vitor looked very good in his last two fights. Certainly against John Jones. I mean, he lost that fight fairly quickly.
But he was close to winning.
But he was close to winning. He got beat that fight. Nobody, no question about that. But he came very close to winning, and he looked very good against Bisping. So, you know, he's always dangerous. Vitor Belfort is the phenom for a reason. But like I said, Luke Rockhold is on a roll, and from what we've seen of Strikeforce guys coming out, they are not that. They are good. They're good, not just B level fighters. These are for the most part the guys that have come over from Strikeforce have had great success in UFC thus far.
Certainly,
so we'll see.
Yeah, that's coming up May 18th on FX. I believe they start at 9 o'clock on FX. I'm not sure, but we'll talk more about that in the time to come. Right now, we're going to take a musical break, and we're going to go with the guys that we love the most, and that's the Mystery Men. I think it's time to gear up, guys, and we'll be right back after that.
All right.
This is the Knight Rider, Robert Knight, from New Moon Rising Wrestling. Have you ever dreamed of having your birthday party inside a professional wrestling ring? Well, now is your opportunity. You've seen the rest. Now it's time to experience the best. At New Moon Rising Wrestling's birthday bash birthday parties, we don't just offer unique and affordable party options. We create memories that will last a lifetime. We offer three outstanding party packages. All packages include great photo opportunities with the wrestlers and real championship belts, along with fun in a professional wrestling ring. For more information, go to nmrwrestling.com or call 609-820-2793 for the New Moon Rising Wrestling Birthday Bash.
All right, so we are back. That, of course, was the Mystery Men with Gear Up. Dan, how are you doing over there?
Oh, I'm angry, very angry at my cable internet provider.
Well, there you go. But I'm glad you are joining us somehow, because we are going to bring on Rekindle. Now, Rekindle is a band in the Philadelphia area. They've been together for a little while. Now, Chris, you had an opportunity to listen to a couple of those tracks. What's your first thought?
I liked what I heard. I was surprised, I guess, to hear a female lead.
Yes.
You know, I
liked them already.
Yeah, but you don't hear that too often. But I did like the lyrics. It was interesting. It was good running music.
Oh, you listened to it while you took your jog.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was good. No, it was good. It was loud. I like it loud, so loud works for me.
Well, we're going to start things off. We have Ant from the band is on the line, but we're going to start off. We're going to play End of Your Story by Rekindle, and then we're going to bring him on.
Nothing left to see when the world has fallen down.
right, so Anthony, welcome to the show. Dan, bring us back first. I'm sorry.
Hey, you killed my buzz. End of your story by Rekindle on Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
I do apologize, Dan, but Anthony, welcome to the show. You're there.
What's going on? What's going on, Dan?
All right. You're also with Dan and Chris. And tell us a little bit about the Rekindle story, how you guys got together, what some of your influences are, and stuff like that.
Yeah, man. I mean, for us, it goes back pretty far. We started back in late middle school, early high school, man. It's been a while. It's kind of sad. I feel so old to say that. The band Max and our drummer, our cousins, our guitar player and our drummer, they're related somehow. And I met those guys pretty much through friends. Just me and Max searching around, trying to find something that we didn't really hear in the area. And we kind of just stuck together. That's really been a thing. We originally started out with another female singer. She kind of drifted off, got married, did that whole family thing and all that.
She sucks.
But the funny thing was, I actually ended up coming back around. We still are friends to this day.
That's
actually kind of what inspired the name Rekindle, funny enough. It's actually when she came back, rekindling the band, rekindling the fire, if you will. She kind of realized it wasn't for her. She wanted to get back into the music thing. And so we kind of went forward with it. In the meantime, we tried out some other singers. And obviously the funny thing is that it seems like it's always female. That's not even an intentional thing. And honestly, it just kind of worked that way. So we ended up with Natalie, who kind of just fell in our lap, man. Honestly, we met her online. Kind of the same thing with our first singer, too. So we've been lucky for that regard. You know, I guess everything's online now, but at that time for us, it was definitely a little different.
So what are some shows that you just got done this Damsels of Distress tour? Tell us a little
Damsels
bit about
of
that.
Darkness.
Oh, I thought it was Distress. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it might sound like a little different type of tour if that was the case. Man. No whips or chains here. It's the Darkness. So with that, yeah, it was pretty cool, man. It was like our first tour thing. It was a package of pretty much either female-fronted or female-involved bands. All the ones I can think of had it. Most of them had female singers, but I think a few on there, we weren't part of the entire tour, may have just had female members in the band. We had a female-fronted band, obviously. So it was pretty neat. You know, we traveled a couple of places, a couple of states, you know, Jersey, the tri-state area pretty much, to play out to, you know, different venues, places we've never played before, actually. I don't think we've played any of the venues that we played on this tour, so that was a pretty nice thing for us. You know, just playing something different. You know, a lot of the bands were heavy. Some of them were, you know, female singers that screamed. Some were just aggressive bands. Some weren't even heavy at all. Some had, like, a more chill, laid-back kind of vibe. So something that you don't really hear every day. You know, most of the bands you really hear in the area for the metal stuff, and I know you guys talked about this earlier, about what genre we sit in. The heavier bands, you know, they're all screaming, and the lighter bands are all singers, and we're kind of that in between, if you will.
Do you guys find any resistance or any acceptance because you are a female fronted band in this kind of hard rock metal vibe? I know you just said you just got off a tour with a bunch of these bands, but you don't really see that. It's not unheard of, but it's not common.
Yeah, I'd say we definitely sat in our own niche. You know, I'd say we're probably closer to hard rock, but you know, hard rock like you said, like you guys were kind of saying it, like, you know, it's kind of dead, you know. Who's the big hard rock bands anymore? I mean, you know, Metallica anymore. Like, you know, that's really, they're even thought about if they're metal or hard rock anymore. So it's cool, though. I think it's what makes this unique, man. It's hard to be unique. And I'm not here to say that we're, you know, the next coming of music or anything like that, but it's cool to hear something that's a little different. Because a lot of times if the bands have chicks in the front of their band, they're very girly and they're about pianos on stage and it's all big, you know, festival of sorts. And we're just kind of out there to play our music, man. We're here to make people headbang and group and have a good time, you know. So if we can do that, I think that's all cool with us. So.
Now, do you have specific bands you try to emulate or inspire you?
I'd say when we started off, it was definitely heavier stuff. If you ask any of the guys in the band, we probably listen to much heavier things than what we come off as. But like a little perspective, I'd say we probably sound closer to bands like, I don't know, Nonpoint, lots of hard rock bands. You know, guys might be a little bit in there. There's all kind of stuff, man. I listen to so much, you know, the bands that are big anymore are, you know, in their own microcosms, if you will. So, I mean, I'd say for us, we probably sound pretty close to those bands, though, you know, with the aggressive stuff. You know, we have a mix of melody in there. Like, there's all kind of bands, so I'm quite sure there's much I'm forgetting, and the band's probably smacking their heads right now. It's like, well, why did you mention those guys? But yeah, I mean, ultimately, we try to sound like us. That's the biggest thing I can say. We give you melody. We give you stuff to headbang to. We have little parts that might surprise you, you know, either heavy or light. We just try to keep variety, man. That's the best thing for us.
All right. So, Anthony, what I'm going to do now is play the other song. This is Red Dust, and then we'll talk about this song.
Yeah,
so just sit back, and we'll be right back.
By Rekindle here on Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. Chris, you want to take it away?
Yes. So songwriting. Who do you guys have a primary songwriter, or is it kind of a group effort?
For the most part, it's a group effort. We do usually have one person bring in an idea, and we kind of work it out, hash it out, have everyone kind of add their own flavor to it, you know? Because I know darn well we'd all get too stuck in our own minds and try to nitpick things. So when the band works together, we get it done a little quicker, a little more efficiently.
You know? Sure. Do you guys come up with like a story, but for the song? Because I'm especially the first song we listened to, end of the story. There is. That seemed like you really had a vision of that song and really kind of a tale to tell. Do you guys have that, or do you just kind of go from like a feeling?
I say definitely from what I recognize now. I'm obviously speaking on behalf of our singer who's not with us today. She writes most of our lyrics, and I know she's extremely poetic and lyrical. That's really her main drive. Our previous singer was much more melody based in making something that you'd feel. I say Natalie's definitely a lot more about the lyrics. You know, that was what kind of impressed us, because she came in with all kind of stuff. Be ready, you know, the imagery and stuff like that she puts in there can be really interesting sometimes. And it's something, again, like not many singers I can think of do it, or if they do, you can't really hear what the heck they're saying. And other lyrics that she says are plainly stated, and it's something you can kind of listen to again and again and go, wow, I didn't hear that the first time.
Now, how long did it take you guys to get your stride and get shows regularly? I mean, was it a slow build, or was it pretty much on fire from the start?
For us, I'd say we kind of just picked up where we left off this time. You know, the Rekindle thing has been going on for probably about 2 years, about over a year and a half probably with Natalie. So we kind of just picked up steam. I mean, it's been getting, you know, warmer and warmer, if you will, as time's going on here, because the shows were kind of hard to find, and they still kind of are. You know, the scene's kind of a little dead for original music around here. If we played cover music, we'd have something every weekend. You know, I'm quite sure you guys probably feel it with the wrestling stuff too. You know, it's just, the hardcore fans have kind of been harder to find, and, you know, the ones that are around are there, but, you know, it makes it tough to swing it to these bars and clubs to let us play. So, you know, we're picking up steam again, though. We're trying to work on more songs. Hopefully we'll have a CD together and out. You know, we did these two tracks, you guys, here today, pretty much on our own. They're self-produced, so hopefully we'll be putting out something that's a little bit bigger. You know, this tour's obviously giving us a little steam to push forward with that, too.
So how hard is it for a band that's been together relatively a short time? I know you guys said you've been doing this for a long time, but you only a couple of years together. How hard is it for you guys to get like something like a tour? Because, I mean, usually you just hear about bands who toil around doing single shows for 3-4 years.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, to a degree, we're in that boat. We still kind of are. Hopefully the tours will start to come. But, I mean, the touring as a whole right now is kind of tough for any band, big band, small band. It doesn't really matter. That's why things like the, you know, Indiegogos and the Kickstarters are such a big thing. Just the gas alone, man, will stop bands from even considering it. You know, it's really hard to make money on any of this stuff. So, you know, that's usually kind of the overall thing. I mean, it'd be great if we could go out and, you know, personal funded tour by ourselves. You know, that would be probably the best thing we could do. Getting a tour package together is almost, you know, forget about it kind of thing. So that's when we heard the chance of the Darkness tour, we couldn't pass it up. But for making your name out there, and there's so many bands, it's definitely a lot of static, the noise. There's not many bands, you know, kind of standing out. So to have your name around for 2 years even is kind of a tough thing, because bands come and go, and they put out an awesome CD, and they have a YouTube page, and they're on Twitter. You know, everyone's kind of the whole shebang. So to have anyone remember your name, kind of tough, but I think we're kind of coming along with it.
So, do you guys have albums out, or do you have plans for an album, or and how would you guys go about releasing? Is that like looking to do something on the internet, an iTunes type thing?
Yeah, most likely. We don't have any albums right now. Again, since it's a 2-track that you hear, you can get those. We did these on SoundCloud. They're free to download, free to listen to. We don't really have any restrictions. And honestly, I think we haven't really had a big discussion about it, but my hopes to go forward with the CD stuff is probably just to give it out, man. You know, people make a big fuss about even paying for music, or, you know, piracy being a big thing for bands that are produced in, you know, massive studios. They can't, you know, people to spend $10 on a CD, they'll spend $10 on a Big Mac, you know, combo, but they won't spend $10 on a CD that was produced over months. So, you know, for me, I kind of like the idea of just music being free as a whole anyway. I mean, you know, it's an experience. You know, if it makes you feel good, I know you'll probably be willing to say, hey, look, these guys deserve something. So that'll hopefully be the plan. And if we do an album, it'll probably be a smaller, you know, kind of thing at the beginning. You know, the scale might get larger as time goes on, but, you know, if we did a 5-6 tracks again, we'd be happy. Our first album with the, you know, core of the band was 9 tracks. You know, again, that was under a different moniker. But, You know, we did it pretty big before, and we liked it a lot. We were really happy with it. You know, we look back and reflect, but I think if we cut the track down, it probably wouldn't have affected it that much. So,
I was going to say, what goes into making an album these days? I mean, how long does it take, I guess, on the indie band circuit to make an album these days?
That depends, really, man. There's so many ways to get it done, and people are doing it. You know, bands literally put out albums month to month. It's crazy. I mean, especially with being able to do the stuff in your own house. I mean, you can still pay to go to a traditional studio, you know, come in with all your songs already written. For most indie bands, you know, you're not really going to go in there and write an album at the studio. It costs too much time and money. But, you know, if you do it yourself, it can be done in a night. I mean, we did these tracks probably, you know, we did live recordings. We've always been a really big band about that. So we you know, practice, and record it in one sitting. And then if we have to go over and punch over anything, we do that later on. But we probably did these tracks all in all probably like a month and a half to get ready, you know, recorded, mixed, and then, you know, our final mastering and then putting them up. I'm quite sure other bands do it quicker, you know, and we could have probably done it quicker if we weren't so particular about it, making sure everything was perfect. And, you know, even still we hear things we want to tweak. So it really comes down to how dedicated the band is. I mean, because obviously, you know, anybody can just throw a mic up and do a single track recording and put it on YouTube or make an MP3 out of it. So it just kind of comes down, you know, every band does it differently. I worked on rap albums even, like I do beats and stuff off the side, where the project is done overnight. You know, they do an EP overnight. It's awesome. You know, it was kind of crazy to see that kind of work put in with a band. You know, obviously we'd be driving people crazy playing all night, so it don't usually happen too much.
Now, is there ever a time, I mean, you've been doing it for 2 years in a row now, but is there ever a time you just leave a show and you're just, oh, that wasn't worth it, or has it all been smooth sailing?
Man, I can tell you I'm not a good liar. There's definitely nights where you come off stage and like, man, that was, you know, you played to maybe two people, and, you know, those two people were people you know, date or significant others of the band. I mean, there are some nights, you know, I mean, the Dance of the Darkness tour was nothing like that. You know, the tours we had on that were, or the dates we had on that were awesome. Everybody stayed out. The band supported each other. The turnout on that was great, but there's definitely been other shows. I'm just like, geez, man, that was kind of tough. But, you know, it comes with it, you know, and you know, in hindsight, hopefully we'll be looking back and going, wow, those were the shows that made us, because, you know, other people might see that stuff and go, hey, man, this isn't for me. You know, you get those prima donna type that kind of want to go on to bigger and better things, if you will. You know, we're going to stick the hard road with it, and it's the only thing we can do.
All right.
Any show we get to play is an awesome one for us.
Oh, I got you.
Nice.
Now, do you have any upcoming dates that you wanted to plug?
Yeah, we actually have a show over in Bristol, PA on May 19th. That is a Sunday night. It's a little bit of an earlier show. It starts about 6 o'clock. I kind of think we're the unofficial headliners of the show. I can't really say, but so we may get a later slot on that date. We'll see. And we have another show that next Saturday, the 25th, at a little bit of a, you know, secluded spot. I can't quite name it completely, but it's called DGB. It's a little bit of a underground kind of show thing that goes on. It's really awesome. Now, those shows are really great. It's like a group of friends, pretty much, that you know, just call people up and say, hey, man, it's a Saturday. What are we going to do this month? Let's plan something out. And, you know, that's really awesome. It feels like the grassroots kind of, again, the hardcore fans being out, you know, sticking out and putting stuff together. So that's the two shows we have right now, and I'm quite sure as the summer progresses, we got a couple other festivals that we're looking at. Hopefully we'll hear something back about those soon, too.
Okay, and if people wanted to follow you, get some of the music, where can they do that?
Yeah, we're primarily on Facebook. You know, the Twitter stuff, we try to get into that. And we also have a YouTube page. But really, Facebook and YouTube will probably be your best bet. If you're on Facebook, you know, you can obviously just search us for Rekindle. We're probably the first ones you'll see. If you don't, you can always go to facebook.com/rekindlemusic. Just one word, Rekindle Music. And then if you're on YouTube, it's just Rekindle. So youtube.com/rekindle, you can find us on there. You know, we have lots of videos up from our shows. And that's kind of the one thing, too, why we chose to just record a couple of tracks, because it gives you something to check out at the show. And then we also have a couple of videos for you to check out, too, if you don't make it out to a show. So you'll hear something new every time, hopefully.
All right. Well, Anthony, I do want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us. That's Rekindle, the 19th, in Bristol's their next show. So thanks for coming on, Anthony.
Oh, thank you for having me on, man. I can't thank you enough. And obviously, you know, we're just a music part, so maybe some people have tuned us out, but I can't thank you guys enough. I know there's a lot of similarities between the music scene and the wrestling scene, and hey, if not for wrestling, I might not be into the heavy metal scene too now. So thank
you
guys again for the opportunity.
Oh, no problem. Thank you so much, and you have a great night, man.
Break a leg,
man. Take it easy, guys.
See ya.
Have a good one.
All right, so that was Anthony from Rekindle.
And it sounds like good things are on the horizon for him.
Yes, I think they sound great. They well spoken, should be. Sound like they got themselves on the right path. Good luck to them.
Yeah, definitely.
I only wish I could get up to that show, honestly. I can't. A little far for me to drive, but.
A little bit. A little bit.
I asked you for soda. You won't send me that either. You're so lazy.
I know. I'm sorry.
Sorry, man. We had just a great time here tonight, people. I'll tell you.
Well, you know, instead of, my stuff not working, it was a great, Shaka was a great interview. Kendall was a great interview with Anthony. Great show tonight.
Yes, indeed. Next week, we are going to have the new flavor. Shane Strickland will be joining us.
Oh, boy.
That is going to be great. Of course, he's a mainstay. I think he really got put on the map when he took on Rich Swann in a trilogy of sorts in CZW. And he's also involved with Riot Pro Wrestling and On Point Wrestling. So Shane Strickland, he's going to be one to watch, I think. And we're going to talk to him next week.
Very good.
I wanted to shout out Master Official Gigante, who is an ice, I think it's for NWA Liberty States.
Yeah.
But he's going to be reffing a match for Vader. And we're both fans. I know he works. He's a referee, but we're both fans, and I think that's awesome. And break a leg, dude.
Alrighty. There you go. Break a leg.
Hope not your leg, but not his leg because he's bigger than you. Good luck, dude. Don't screw it up.
Not literally.
Two comes after one, and three comes after two.
There you are.
That's how that works.
So you can. Shaka didn't have a Twitter, did he?
No, he didn't. No, I did this. I was searching for both Shaka and Rekindle, and both of them are not on Twitter.
Yeah, so you can't find him on Twitter, but you can find him on Facebook. Just search for Harold Riddick.
Harold Riddick, and then for Rekindle, it's Facebook.com/RekindleMusic and YouTube.com/Rekindle.
So there you go, and check them out. Support that band. Like the Mystery Men, they are, I think, a band on the rise. Yeah? No?
Yes, sir. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yes. So
Dan was waiting for me, and
awkward
silence.
Yes. Sorry.
It's fine. It's fine. I'm a little under the weather, but Dan, where can they find people find you?
DanLow83 on Twitter.
Omega, where can the fine people find you?
The dear people can find me on Twitter at Omega Squad.
I am, of course, the Dean of Credibility, Double D, the man with the hurt back. Under the weather.
Hold on. I'm sorry. It's not / Rekindle. Don't go to that one on YouTube.
Oh.
He said it was Rekindle, but that certainly is not it.
What is that?
That's what I'm looking at right now, so stall for like a second. The actual Rekindle thing is something completely different.
Well, I was asking what that was. That could be amusing.
Oh, it was something bad. No, it's amusing.
But not something that they would really want to...
Nope.
Okay.
That's absolutely not.
I am, of course, the Dean of Credibility, Double D.
I can't find it. Sorry, gentlemen.
You can find me at Folsom County. Just listen back. Rewind. Yeah. Rewind this. Listen back. And
Facebook.com/RekindleMusic.
There you go. Yeah. And you can probably find it. They're also on Reverb Nation. So check that out as well. Like the Facebook, Facebook.com/HIAC Talk Radio, the Twitter HIAC Talk Radio. You can find me at Folsom County. Guys, have a great week. Next week, like I said, Shane Strickland will be our guest. And I'm also working on Masada. So hopefully by the end of May, we will talk with CZW World Champion Masada. And Dan, very quickly, I'm going to say this struck me by surprise. Mm-hmm. I asked Masada if he ever did podcast interviews. He said he's very open to it, but he hasn't. Now, this is a guy who has been a very dominating champion for CZW, and no one's asked him to do a podcast interview.
Oh.
Yeah, so...
Well, we'll see what happens.
I thought it was very odd that nobody asked him, but there you go. So until next week, when Shane Strickland joins us, you guys have a good week.
See you.
See ya. And I'm going to look back at him and whisper.